I'm Vermont Edition producer Sam Gail Rosen. This podcast has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. You're not allowed to vote in U.S. federal elections for president, congressperson, etc., unless you are a U.S. citizen. There's no law prohibiting states from making rules allowing non-citizens to vote, but since the 1920s, no states have made that kind of allowance. It used to be much more common. But some municipalities have decided that they're going to let people who live in their communities, work in their businesses, and pay their town taxes, but don't have U.S. citizenship, vote in local affairs. Vermont communities have considered this over the years, but none currently allow it. But Winooski and Montpelier are both contemplating a change. Today on the show, we're going to talk about how it would work and why these municipalities are considering it. Joining us is Eric Covey, a Winooski City Council member. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Jane.
Also with me here in VPR's Montpelier studio is Rob Roper, president of the Ethan Allen Institute, a conservative think tank. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you for having us.
So, Eric Covey, can I ask you first, how and why is Winooski even contemplating this idea? How did this come up?
Absolutely. So it began with a discussion just in regards to our city's charter on whether or not we wanted to open up and look at the charter. In that process, I did hear from a number of Winooski residents who are non-citizens who, like you mentioned, pay taxes, own homes, send their kids to our schools, but have zero say in local decision-making about how their tax dollars are being spent on their kids' education or on local issues that impact their quality of life. So to me, that's what really kicked off the discussion. And we had a public hearing part of the process as the city council was considering whether or not we would move forward in some way or another, where a number of community members, both citizens and non-citizens, came out to speak in support of us opening up the charter to look at potentially allowing this.
And you personally support this idea?
I do, yeah. I think we have a strong history of non-citizen voting in local issues that you alluded to. That was actually very common practice up until about the 1920s. And really, at the end of the day, this is about the local impact on residents. The idea is if you're a resident, you should be able to vote on issues that impact your quality of life. Of course, I'm speaking for myself individually. I can't speak for the council as a whole, but I'm very excited to see us moving forward in discussions around this issue.
And the council as a whole has broadly supported this idea.
So, again, I can only speak for myself and not for the full council. The council did vote in majority to move forward with a timeline that would result in placing an item before voters in November. But from what I've heard broadly, it does seem like there is general support amongst council members for the concept.
Rob Roper, obviously you're here as the foil. So why don't you think this is a good idea?
Well, that's just one instance where I think the federal government actually gets it right. And I think that that you should have to be a citizen in order to vote in elections. These folks who are here are immigrants, and they're here legally, and we respect what they contribute to the communities. But we want to incentivize them to become citizens. And becoming a citizen of the United States is a process. And in that process, you not only learn your rights, such as voting, but also a lot of the responsibilities that come along with those rights. And I think until they go through that process, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have them voting. That's something they should aspire to become a citizen.
Now, this would still prevent – I mean, there is a federal law that says you cannot vote in federal elections. So people who are not citizens but who are residents of Winooski or Montpelier, should the Montpelier plan move through, still wouldn't be able to vote for their congressperson or for the president. And there's no state law that allows them to vote. So really, they'd only be voting in their local community, where one might argue this is where local rules have the most impact on their daily lives, where they are participants in this community. But even so, you think this should be an incentive to become a U.S. citizen, even if we're talking about municipal issues?
Yes, I do. I mean, if you look at, you know, Vermont election law, it doesn't prohibit this, but the people who are in order to vote, you not only have to be domiciled in the community where you're voting, you also have to be able to demonstrate your intent to stay there, which is a pretty strong requirement that ensures that people who are voting in the community are really, really rooted in that community. And again, I think that going through that citizenship process and becoming a citizen and earning that right to vote is an important part of establishing those roots.
We've gotten some negative feedback so far from listeners who see this idea, and their immediate reaction is, this is wrong. Paul says, I can't believe this is even a question. But then again, we've allowed illegal immigrants to obtain driver's licenses. Voting is a privilege and a responsibility granted to citizens who live and have lived here legally, and that's the way it needs to stay. Get ready for the next question. Should 16 and 17-year-olds be able to vote? Alpha 1-6 says, absolutely not. Voting is one of those privileges that is reserved for legal citizens only. How many other countries allow non-citizens to vote? It's a slippery slope. Carol says, if non-citizens can vote in local elections, then I demand to vote in local elections where my camp is located, along with voting in the town where I live. After all, I pay taxes in both towns. Mary says, would we be able to go to Canada and vote? I sincerely doubt it. If you want a voice in how your tax money is spent, then become a citizen. Just because they pay taxes doesn't give them all rights. Their tax money helps pay for the resources they use by living here. And Ford says, I cannot fathom how this insanity has even become a public discussion. Who in their right mind actually thinks someone who doesn't belong to this nation should have a say in how it's directed? So, Eric Covey, how do you respond to that? I mean, I think some of this, clearly when we're talking about whether people who are here legally or illegally are considered in that, we should talk about what the rules would entail. But, you know, if the initial reaction is, no, this is a right of citizenship, how do you sort of combat that idea? Or how do you feel like it's still worthwhile?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to point out this is only in local issues. I also do think that there's this misnomer in regards to whether or not somebody who is an immigrant who may be on the path to citizenship or is a new American has a level of investment in our community. So to speak to your point, Mr. Roper, I think we're going to hear, my understanding is we're going to hear from Lauren Sampson shortly, who serves on our Winooski City Planning Commission, on our Library Committee, and is a guardian ad litem here in Vermont. And if you want, I don't think that there's any better example of somebody who is more invested in their sense of place and their home and their community here than that. I also do think this goes down to the core issue of no taxation without representation, which is a principle that once upon a time this country fought a war for independence over. And if we want to encourage citizens and non-citizens to engage in our civic processes and engage in the discourse that we're having in our communities, this is actually a great way we can make sure people are at the table and can have their voices heard. And I would actually push back and say this is a great incentive for people who are in our community under a variety of different legal statuses, whether they're green card holders, whether they're here on a student visa or a work visa, to pursue citizenship because they're in a place that's valuing their voice and understanding that local issues severely impact their quality of life and that they should have the ability to weigh in on those issues.
But so some people may be on the path to citizenship, but what about the argument that says if you want to vote, become a citizen? That is one of the benefits of citizenship in this country.
Well, I think that there's also a lot of confusion in a misunderstanding that it's as easy as wanting to or not wanting to become a citizen. There are actually a lot of different processes and a lot of different barriers that people encounter. It's cumbersome. There's a bureaucratic logjam, frankly, at this point. For people who are pursuing their legal citizenship status. Right now, because of that bureaucratic logjam, in many instances, it comes down to a lottery. And that individual process that someone might be on is very different for each person depending on what their status is and how that process unfolds. So I don't think it's as black and white as if someone wants to be a citizen or is a non-citizen. For instance, if somebody is a refugee from a war-torn country, it might be incredibly difficult for them to get the paperwork necessary for them to continue down the path towards citizenship despite having an incredible investment in the community and wanting to pursue that path.
Rob Roper?
Well, I completely respect the stories that you're telling about people, and I completely respect the value that they add to their communities and their commitments to their communities. But the process of becoming a citizen, I think, should be completed before they're able to get the vote. It doesn't diminish what they're doing for their communities. But you know, as I pointed out before, if you read the naturalization oath of allegiance to the United States, it's pretty extensive, and I'll read it very quickly. It's not that long. It says, "I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance allegiances and fidelity to any foreign prince, potentate, state, or sovereignty of whom I will have heretofore been a subject or citizen, that I will support and defend the Constitution and the laws of the United States of America against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I will bear arms on behalf of the United States when required by law, that I will perform noncombatant services in the armed forces of the United States when required by the law, that I will perform work of national importance under civilian direction when required by the law, and that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, so help me God. That's some pretty serious stuff that you're committing to when you become a citizen of the United States. And I think that, you know, in order to get that vote, to earn that vote, you have had to have gone through a significant process in order to get to that point. And I think it's important that people go through that process before they get the rights that come with those responsibilities.
Why, though?
Why?
Yeah.
Because
why is it important to have said, you know, to have taken that oath, to have paid that money, you know, to have gone through that process, which can be a multi-year process.
It is.
And we
could have another whole show on how we need to reform our immigration laws to make this a more streamlined process for people coming into the country. And I'd be happy to probably take your side.
That can be our second hour.
That can be our second hour. But I think it's not so much that, you know, taking the oath. It's the process that they go. It's the tests that they take. It's the classes that they take. It's you know, going through all of that process to really understand what it means to be a citizen of the United States. That just doesn't come by osmosis. And a lot of the things that they're doing in their communities, I think, are building that understanding. And in many cases, I think immigrants have a better understanding as a result of going through this process than a lot of natural-born citizens do.
Well, wouldn't you argue that by being able to participate in our civic process, such as weighing in on local issues, that is a step in that process and that education? You know, right now in our high schools, we educate our youth on the importance of civic engagement and voting. In our Winooski High Schools, over 40% of our students are ESL learners, from my understanding. So they're sitting and learning about the importance of civic engagement and the voting process alongside their peers. But when they graduate, they can't go vote with their friends. And I think that provides an incredible incentive and learning opportunity for people to get engaged in their communities, because we're also showing we value their voice and we want them at the table.
But they are engaged. And as I said, the fact that they don't have the right to vote yet because they haven't yet become a citizen doesn't diminish the value that they're adding to their communities. I think it's enhancing their education as to what it means to be an American citizen. And I think it's wonderful what they're doing. They are engaged. They do have an opportunity to speak out. And they're doing it. And I'm sure the person that's going to call in later will be a perfect example of that.
Well, and let's hear from other people who are thinking about this issue and have some thoughts on this. Stephen is calling in from Burlington. Hi, Stephen. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, hi. I vehemently disagree with Mr. Roper. It's very clear to me that the local electoral scene is the perfect place to teach for people to learn how to participate in democracy. And so, therefore, you would not want to wait until citizenship. If you require legal status, that's fine. But the idea that you have to be a citizen? No. No, you're training to become a citizen. And the other point I find very, very offensive is the idea that... I'm freezing.
That's all right, Stephen. You made a good... go ahead. You get it back.
No.
Okay, Stephen, you're good. You're good. You made a good point, and we're going to move on to another one because there are lots of different people who want to weigh in on this. As I said, we heard from a lot of people who said this is a really bad idea. Stephen says it's a good idea. Aaron in Winooski, you're on the line. What do you think?
I've voted in every local election since moving to Winooski 5 years ago. I bought a house earlier this spring, and a couple weeks ago, I voted in the primary elections as a homeowner for the first time. While I was voting on some city budget items and considering how they'd impact my property taxes, I took a moment and reflected on what a great city Winooski is and how proud I am to participate in our local democracy. And I want to extend that participation to all my neighbors by inviting them to vote in local elections, because no matter what we might agree or disagree on, we all share the same interest in making Winooski a great place to live and raise a family. It's fundamentally unjust that someone could own a house in Winooski or send their children to public school here while not having a voice in how their tax dollars are spent or in structuring our education system.
So, Aaron, let me ask you, when you think about this, what is the value of U.S. citizenship if not fundamentally the right to have a say in what happens in this country, and that extends to your local community. How do you sort of square the value of citizenship with the right to have a say in your local affairs?
I see voting in local elections as a great introduction to the duties that are part of being a U.S. citizenship, because it's also about duty and responsibility, and participating in democracy is part of that. And I want to invite my neighbors to join me.
Aaron, thanks for your call. I appreciate hearing your perspective. Eric Covey, I want to come back to you just briefly here to ask you as a member of the City Council to explain this process. So as I said, Winooski and Montpelier are both considering this. The process would be fairly similar in both communities, but a little bit different. So how would it work in Winooski? How does it actually move through the process?
Yeah, so first of all, I do want to say this is the first step in moving the process forward. The council merely voted to adopt a proposed timeline that will result in an item being put on the November ballot for Winooski voters to vote on. But there are a number of really important process standpoints between now and then. So the next step immediately, of course, is for city staff and legal counsel to actually come back with potential language for what the actual charter change might look like. And of course, council would have to vote on that language before it's actually put forward to voters. A part of that timeline also included a robust public hearing and input process so that we can make sure to engage our community members around these discussions and make sure to gather public input and feedback as we move forward. And then ultimately, it would be up to Winooski voters to vote on whether or not they'd like to send this to the legislature.
And right, because even if Winooski voters say this is something that we'd like, that doesn't automatically make it so. This has to get legislative approval.
That's correct. Because we're a Dillon's rural state, it will have to go to the legislature, and ultimately the legislature would have to vote on whether or not to approve the charter. At that point, it would have to be signed into law, and then, of course, there could be legal challenges that arise. So this is the first step down a long path, but I think it's the step that's right for our community.
Do you have a sense of how the legislature would feel about that step that Winooski might take?
I don't, but what I can say is just in conversations I've had with community members in Winooski and in across the state, there is broad support for this issue. By and large, the vast majority of feedback that I've heard from people is in support of the concept. And I would say, you know, I understand that it's a new conversation for a lot of people, but there's a lot of historical precedents for it. And I'd also say that in this country, we have a history of having difficult conversations around voting, whether that was for non-landowners, for women, or for African Americans, who were all told time and time again to wait their turn. And I'm not going to look another one of my community members, my neighbors, residents of Winooski in the eye to tell them that they need to continue to wait while their tax dollars are being spent without them being able to have the input on how those tax dollars are being spent.
We're talking today about this question about who should be allowed to vote in local elections. Montpelier and Winooski are thinking about allowing non-U.S. citizens, but members of their community, to vote in, again, local municipal elections. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking about the idea of allowing non-U.S. citizens to vote in local elections. Montpelier and Winooski are both in the process of considering the idea. We've been talking with Eric Covey, a Winooski City Council member, and Rob Roper, president of the Ethan Allen Institute. And let's get the voice of one of those potential non-citizen voters into the mix here as well. Lauren Sampson lives in Winooski. She's a Canadian citizen, and she serves on the Winooski City Planning Commission. Lauren, thanks for talking with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So do you want to be able to vote in Winooski elections?
I would like to be able to vote in my local elections. As was alluded to, I currently participate in a couple of different ways in my community. The Planning Commission is one. The Library Committee is another. Garden of Lightham, the Community Justice Center on the Reparative Board in Nacosa. And then in a couple of other roles in sort of Vermont-wide organizations. But not being able to vote feels like a last step that I'd like to take in order to really cement my position and place in the community I've come to call my home.
Why? It sounds like you're doing a lot to shape the community and to have a voice in the community. Why is voting so important?
I think because voting represents an opportunity to shape policy in a way that you can't always do in other capacities. You know, my work as a guardian ad litem is, for example, very individual. It's a particular child, it's a particular family. The opportunity to shape policy by, for example, electing a city council member or approving a bond vote just isn't there in quite the same way. And so being able to take that last step and making my voice heard on community-wide issues would be a way, like I said, to cement my belonging in the place I've come to call my home.
So then, Lauren, why not become a U.S. citizen?
I'm currently in the process of applying for legal permanent residency, a process that I started a couple of months ago. I was only able to start this process a few months ago because I married a U.S. citizen. Prior to didn't have a hook, so to speak, to legal permanent residency. I am an attorney in Burlington, Vermont. I concentrate about half my practice in immigration law, and so I know better than most that the process to legal permanent residency or to citizenship can be fraught. You need a sponsor of some variety in many cases. You have to pay a large deal of money, and so undertaking that process is a lengthy one, is a considerable one, and one that demands a lot from you. And so I was at the point at which I was able to do that. I've started on that process, but it's up to the U.S. government to see how long that takes and where that will go.
That's Lauren Sampson. Lauren's a Canadian citizen. She lives in Winooski. And Lauren, I want to thank you very much for talking with us and sharing your personal perspective on this.
Of course.
We should also mention that Lauren is an attorney at Dinsey Knapp and McAndrew, which is a VPR underwriter. And again, we're talking today about this question of who should get to vote in local elections. There's no legal rule that prevents people who live in Vermont communities but are not U.S. citizens from voting in local elections, but currently no towns and cities allow that. Winooski and Montpelier are contemplating making a change, and you can share your perspective with us at vpr.net or on the VPR Facebook page or by calling 800-639-2211. Before we come back to our guests here, let's get a voice in from Montpelier, the other community that is currently contemplating this, and Connor Casey is a city council member for Montpelier and is on the line with us now. Hi, Connor. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. It's Connor Casey here, and I'll be spending the weekend going door-to-door canvassing to try to petition this onto the ballot in Montpelier. I'd echo what many have said. There are so many barriers to obtaining citizenship, and frankly, it can be a long process. But in the meantime, non-U.S. citizens residing here are very much part of our communities. We certainly find that in Montpelier. They attend our schools, they work in local businesses, and they absolutely contribute to our economy. So we have a horrific president already who is vilifying anybody not holding a U.S. passport. And I would emphasize we shouldn't be alarmists here. I very much doubt that foreign nationals are trying to take over our municipalities. And I just don't buy the line that this waters down what it actually means to be a citizen. It's simply giving people a voice in the communities they live in. Just as an example, I'm a dual citizen. I hold an Irish passport as well. Does that mean, like, my loyalties are conflicted or that I'm unfit to sit on the city council?
Well, presumably it makes your loyalties conflicted, Connor, based on what the oath of citizenship is for the United States, doesn't it? I mean, that oath requires you to say, I denounce my previous citizenships. Now, the country of Ireland doesn't recognize that, and so you're allowed to hold a dual citizenship. But, I mean, isn't that a problematic part of the oath, just since we're getting into that?
Well, I mean, like, you know, I come from a family of immigrants. I have, you know, cousins who are, like, currently going through the lottery system. And they've resided here for years. It's, I think what we have here in a time when we hear this hateful rhetoric going on is for Vermont to be a beacon, I think, telling people they're welcome here. They're welcome to participate. And, of course, we encourage them to be a citizen. But this is a very good first step.
Well, Connor, I appreciate you sharing your perspective as a member of the Montpelier City Council. Montpelier, of course, the other community that is currently thinking about how to potentially go about the process of having non-citizens vote. We got a note from Jonathan in Colchester who says, absolutely not. I was a permanent resident for 20 years before I took the U.S. citizenship oath, and never once did I feel I deserved the right to vote as a non-citizen in the U.S. After all, I was still able to vote in my country of birth, England. your prospective welcome, go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition or call 800-639-2211. Mark writes in to say, I don't think Lauren Sampson, who we just heard from before, is the kind of non-citizen that most people think of when they voice their opposition to this voting initiative in Winooski and Montpelier. Lauren, a very active participant in Winooski City affairs, but, you know, this would open the door for many different kinds of people who may or may not have the same civic-minded virtues in mind when they get that right to vote. So, Eric Covey, does it matter that, you know, some people may see this as, this is my home, this is where I'm participating, and others may not? Is that still okay?
Well, I think that that's a misnomer in general. I think that there's a lot of rhetoric that paints immigrants and our immigrant community members in a light that is not necessarily true in the vast majority of instances. And I would just ask to continue to go back and look at what's just and what's right. Our country was founded on this principle of no taxation without representation. And to give you a little bit of a background, in Winooski, we just went through and voters passed two very large bond items that will impact quality of life for Winooski residents as well as tax rates if those projects continue to move forward. And many community members who are directly impacted by that did not have the ability to weigh in on whether or not the city should move forward with looking at completion of those projects.
Before I come back to you, Rob, I just want to take a call here from Renee, who's living in Winooski. Hi, Renee. What's your perspective?
Hi. So I'm not a citizen. I've been living in Winooski for 5 years. I own a house here. And it's kind of outrageous that I'm not allowed to express my voice. And the reason I'm not a citizen is if I gave up my citizenship, I would lose. If I gave up my Slovakian citizenship, I would lose the opportunity to stay there for a prolonged time because the U.S. doesn't allow dual citizenship with Slovakia. And I also want to say that I'm not allowed to vote in Slovakia because I gave up my residency, but not the citizenship. So I'm kind of in a stuck in the middle where I can't really vote here where my home is, and I can't vote over there, which is a natural kind of thing.
Yeah, Renee, thanks for sharing your perspective. I appreciate hearing that, and interesting that you can't vote where you are a citizen because you're not a resident, and you can't vote where you're a resident because you're not a citizen. So, Rob Roper, we've heard a lot of thoughts here now.
Well, to the last caller, I think that's one of the issues that we're bringing up with the oath of citizenship. He doesn't want to give up his citizenship in Slovakia. So I respect that because that's where he's from. In fact, I have a brother-in-law who is a Canadian citizen, very much the same situation as Lauren. He's been here for over 20 years, married to my sister. They have two kids. He's extremely involved in his community. He does not want to give up his Canadian citizenship, so he's never become a U.S. citizen. And he doesn't get to vote here. And he doesn't have a problem with that. He understands. I do want to bring up the idea of no taxation without representation because, in 1964, we passed the 24th Amendment, which outlawed poll taxes. And we have never – well, I shouldn't say we've never, but we have abandoned the idea that you have to pay a tax in order to get the right to vote. If you apply this idea of people, well, I pay taxes and I own property, then 14% of the homes in the state of Vermont are second homes. And I'm sure that a lot of those people from New Jersey and Connecticut and Massachusetts would love the opportunity to vote on their school budget to see how it affects their property taxes. Are we going to extend the right to vote to them because they pay taxes in the community and they own property in the community? And in many cases, those are folks that sit on boards of the Rotary Club and do a lot of good in their communities. They don't have a voice. Should we open up and give the voice to them as well?
Why is it okay then to have somebody who's not a U.S. citizen serve on, say, a school board or a planning commission where they have a real opportunity to shape the policies that then go before the voters, but not then to allow similar people who don't happen to be on the commission but who have children in the schools or who have to live with the decisions not to vote on the same things that somebody who's not a citizen could actually be shaping the policy on?
Again, you have an opportunity if you're here legally and you're in your community to participate in a lot of big ways. It's just, you know, voting is sort of like, you know, when you graduate from high school, you get the diploma and that's the vote. And these folks, I think, are working their way through the classes to get to the point where they get the vote. If they choose not to graduate, like the last caller, or my brother-in-law, then you don't get the diploma and you don't get to vote.
Jonathan emailed in to say, I thought local control was a central tenet of the Ethan Allen Institute. Why doesn't that concept apply to local decisions about who votes in municipal elections?
Well, it does. I mean, this is very much a local control issue. As I said at the beginning of the program, if you look at Vermont law, I mean, the people who get to vote, they not only have to be domiciled in the community, they have to be able to demonstrate an intent to remain in the community. And I think that the folks that we're talking about here have not demonstrated an intent to remain.
We got a note from John who says, how about meeting conservatives halfway? Run a series of courses on government. On graduation, you get a local voting allowance, and this could get around the immigration backlog. Eric Covey, is there sort of a workaround that you think could work, or is this what is this partly on principle what you really think Winooski should be doing?
Well, I think that right now is a big part of the process in Winooski staff and our legal counsel looking at what options might exist in order for this to be accomplished. So I do think that we're open to what those potential options may be and exactly what shape this needs to take if it's going to move forward. And then ultimately, like the previous message alluded to, this is a matter of local control and local decision making, and Winooski voters will ultimately be the ones to vote on whether or not to move this forward if the council can congeal around language to do so. And so it makes me a little bit confused why Mr. Roper is objecting to this issue that impacts Winooski residents when Mr. Roper is not a resident of Winooski and doesn't have nearly the same level of investment in either the outcomes of this individual vote or the local issues that all of our Winooski residents, whether they're citizens or non-citizens, do.
Rob Roper.
Well, you invited me on the program. That's why I'm here.
Do you sort of stand on principle on this and think really this is, I mean, even if it's not a community that you live in or that affects you personally, you know, this is sort of on principle something that you would work to oppose?
Would I work to oppose it in Winooski? No, I don't plan on going to Winooski and start waving signs on street corners. But I do think it's an important principle that we really take the idea of citizenship seriously. We really take the idea of a vote seriously. I think that there's a lot of things that are happening in our communities around the country today that work to diminish the value of that vote and that are working to diminish the value of that citizenship. The folks who are running who want to become U.S. citizenships, who have immigrated here legally and are participating in our communities, these folks have the potential to be some of the best citizens that we have and best neighbors that we have currently before they become citizens. I don't think we should be discouraging them. I think that this should be an incentive for them to take the final step and become a U.S. citizen.
Eric Covey, just a couple seconds, but so when will you know if this is on the November ballot?
So at our next two city council meetings is when the council will have potential draft language to consider. And ultimately, the council would need to vote to move that language forward in order for it to appear before voters in November.
All right. We'll keep an eye on it. That's Eric Covey, a Winooski City Council member. Rob Roper is president of the Ethan Allen Institute, a conservative think tank. Thanks very much to both of you for being on the program today. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you,
Jane.